the second edition of the Matt Cummins Fantasy Baseball Podcast. In today's episode, we're going to talk about second base and how to approach second base when entering your drafts. But before we talk about that, I wanted to talk about some housekeeping, get that out of the way first. So you can find my work at mattcummins.com. You can also find me at baseballprofessor.com. Well, actually, sorry, it's baseballprof.com, but we're called baseball professor. Also, you can find me at at Through the Fence Baseball as well. You can also reach me at Twitter. I don't know which one it is, but you can reach me on Twitter at mattcummins.com. Now, before I talk about second base yet again, I wanted to talk about what's happened to me in the last few days. So on Thursday, I released my fantasy baseball guide along with my projections and rankings and dollar values for the 2014 season. Within the guide, you'll find over 440 player profiles, as well as some high-level strategies that you could be using for your fantasy drafts. But the meat of it is the player profiles. In the fantasy guide, you'll also find over 350 pages with over 150,000 words, which, to put that into context, that's about twice the size of Catcher in the Rye, which is a BS book, but that just provides some context there about how long it is. And the goal of the guide was to provide, you know, deeper level information that you can't find anywhere else. Now, what I've noticed is that this industry is pretty fragmented. Now, the big guys, the big boys like Jason Collette, Brett Sayer, Eric Carabel, Tristan Cockcroft, Paul Spohr, those guys do a really good job of providing really good information to fantasy players. But people that are in my tier, the aspiring fantasy writers, I guess, a lot of us do a bad job. A lot of times you'll see narratives without, you know, player evaluation that revolves around narrative rather than any type of actual type of data or observation. For example, I literally read a report on a player that said the reason why he struggled was because he had too much pressure on his back because he had to carry the offense. Well, what am I supposed to do with that? That doesn't really do anything, you know, for me. That doesn't really give me any type of better insight into why this player did well or why he struggled last year. And it's quite frustrating, actually, when you read stuff like that, because people actually read these people and think that these people are really knowledgeable about what they're doing. And when, in fact, they're not, they're just spewing stuff that, you know, they probably saw on either on the radio or on Baseball Today or Baseball Tonight. Sorry, not Baseball Today. Baseball Today was a good podcast, but something that they saw on, you know, ESPN at 9:30, you know, or 9 o'clock at night. And, you know, that's not what I, you know, in order to do well in fantasy leagues, you need to have a better idea of why a player, you know, did well or did not do well. And the goal of all of my player profiles was to try to achieve that. Now, obviously, not all of them are going to have that type of insight. For example, you know, when I was reviewing Gordon Beckham, you know, there's not really much to say there. He's not that good. But when I reviewed Ian Desmond, I wanted to get a better idea of how he was able to achieve, how he was able to take that, you know, take the step forward 2 years ago, and why he was able to achieve those numbers the 2020 seasons that he's had the past two seasons. So a lot of the feedback that I've received, the vast majority of it has been extremely positive. And actually, you know, some of the comments that I've received have been really cool. It makes me think that I actually do provide something different than even the bigger guys out there, which is actually really encouraging. It actually helps me, you know, keeps the fire burning, because when I was writing this guide, you know, it took about 3-4 months. And if you combine that with, you know, I have a job, you know, I do, you know, I have a 40-hour, actually not 40-hour, but it's a 40-50-hour week job in conjunction with writing this guide. And if you ever tried writing something like that vast, it, you know, it takes up a lot of your time. And it's really hard sometimes when you're, you know, you're writing this, writing, you know, this vast book, and I'm rambling now, but last year I only had, you know, maybe like 50 downloads, and this year I wanted to do a better version of last year, and so I allocated even more hours to it, and I spent even more time researching and expanding the amount of players that I'm doing or that I'm researching or writing about, and increasing the scope as well and making everything bigger than it was last year. And it's a little hard sometimes when you're writing something like this time intensive and knowing that last year you only received like 50 downloads. This year I've received a little over 400 in the first 2 days that it's been released, so, which is really, really cool. And like I said before, everyone is has really good feedback for what I'm doing or what I wrote. And so I think I highly encourage you to check this out. A lot of the things I'm going to be talking about today are taken from my fantasy baseball guide. So, and I actually highly recommend, you know, you stop listening to me and reading the guide, because I'm a better communicator with the written word than with my voice. So, but yeah, so it's been really cool. So yeah, all right, so let's talk about second base. So the first player I wanted to talk about was Robinson Cano. Now, a lot of other fantasy podcasts and a lot of other fantasy mediums have already talked about Cano at great length, and I'm not going to go into that much detail about Cano. A little background first is that I still have Cano in my top 10. He's in the back half of the top 10, and I'm not too worried about him moving to the to Seattle's ballpark. I don't think it's going to have that huge of an effect on his power. It may decrease maybe a couple home runs, but not dramatically. But one level of insight that I've noticed is that no one's really talking about how left-handed heavy the Mariners lineup is, other than Corey Hart or you know, Justin Smoke or Mike Zunino. There aren't any other left-handed or any other right-handed hitters in the lineup, which means that at the end of games, you know, it's very likely that Cano will see more left-handed pitchers out of the bullpen than right-handed pitchers, which actually could have a negative effect on his batting average. So, for example, since 2008, he has a .287 batting average against lefties versus a .317 batting average. So instead of maybe possibly having a 300 plus or like a .315 batting average, you may only have like a .300 batting average in 2014. So that's something to be aware of from Robinson Cano. So the next player I wanted to talk about was Jason Kipnis. So for the past two seasons, he's had really good first halves and really poor second halves. And the question is, from a fantasy perspective, is why is that happening, and will that happen again in 2014? I really don't know why, what could have caused, you know, the poor second halves, the, you know, for both years. It's possible that maybe it was just poor conditioning and his body, he wasn't conditioned well enough to last for a full season. If that's the case, then, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he actually ends up the year as the number one second baseman, if that's the case. But my biggest question with him is, what type of batting average are we going to see from Jason Kipnis in 2014? Now, he took some steps, you know, that make me believe that his batting average can sustain itself, or last year's batting average can sustain itself, because he's hitting the ball less on the ground and more in the air, which is always great. But he also saw his strikeout rate increase 5 percentage points, which is never something that I never want to see from any type of hitter, because that reduces the likelihood of them having a higher batting average. So I have him projected as a .270 hitter, which is basically a, you know, an average of the last two seasons. But I'm more inclined to believe that he'll probably be a .260 to .270 hitter instead of the .285 hitter. Was he .285? Let me see. What was he last year? He was a .284 hitter. So I'm more inclined to believe that he's a .260 to .270 hitter than a .280 plus hitter, because I want to see him do it again for another full year. But if the batting average is only, you know, if it's only .260 to .270, then his fantasy appeal reduces greatly, because, you know, usually when I'm drafting with my first two or three picks, I want to have two guys that will provide a pretty good batting average, because they're going to act as the anchor for the rest of my team. And also, as you move along the draft, you know, it's going to be harder and harder to find a batting average. And if you start off with a low batting average player, with your first or second round pick, it's going to put you in a hole, and you're going to have to reach for, you know, higher batting average guys, or you're going to have to go out of your way to make sure that you own a Joe Mauer, for example, that can kind of, you know, counterbalance the batting average of both players. So the next player I wanted to talk about was a player that I'm really high on, and that the industry, not the industry, but the fantasy community is not high on. And that player is Aaron Hill. Now, when I say the name Aaron Hill, you know, two things probably come to your mind. One could be the one really good year that he had in 2009 when he had 36 home runs and a .286 batting average. Or it could be the really bad 2011 and 2010 seasons where he had a .205 batting average and 26 home runs in 2010. Or, you know, a .246 batting average and only 8 home runs in 2011. So now when I'm looking at that, it's hard to, you know, if you actually owned him in 2010 or 2011, he probably single-handedly destroyed your fantasy year. Now, the reason why I don't think that's going to happen again is because since being acquired by the Diamondbacks, he's been a .290-plus hitter, you know, in over 240 games, which is a pretty good sample size for me to think that he'll be able to maintain the batting average that he's shown, which means I think that his floor is .270, which could be, you know, could be a mistake in the end, but I don't see that happening because of the last 2 years or two plus years in Arizona for Aaron Hill. Now, another thing to consider is how deep the position of second base is actually is this year. Now, the second base doesn't really have a lot of studs in it after the fourth or fifth second baseman taken off the board, but once you get past that, they're all pretty much about the same, which means you, in order to do well or to have a competitive advantage against your competition, you need to find the player that will surpass the value of the next tier, which means, you know, you need to find a player that will do better than, you know, what they're being drafted at. To me, Aaron Hill provides that for you. Now, you know, he's the only one after, you know, the Canoes, the Kipnises, and the Pedroias, and maybe the Daniel Murphys, that will provide, you know, that can provide 20-plus home runs with 10-plus stolen bases. Now, if Aaron Hill, you know, flames out, you'll be able to find a player on the waiver wire and not really, you know, lose very much in terms of value. So, for example, I'm, you know, if you're in a 10-team league, I'm pretty sure you'll be able to find a Neil Walker on the waiver wire all year, or maybe a Scooter Gennett, for example. But if Aaron Hill, you know, maintains the performance that he showed in 2012 and 2013, you have a really good, you know, really good positive ROI on that draft pick or on that auction dollar that you spent on him. So the next two players I wanted to discuss were Howard Kendrick and Martin Prado. Specifically, I wanted to talk about Kendrick because as of right now, Prado is being drafted 6 full rounds ahead of Kendrick, which doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Now, if you look at my fantasy guide, you'll notice that Kendrick and Prado have had pretty much the same production the last 3 years, which means Kendrick is a great value entering 2014. Now, last year, he missed some time due to a freak knee injury when he ran into his teammate, Colin Cowgill, in the field. Now, it's possible that the leg injury, the knee injury, and other various nagging leg injuries affected his low stolen base totals last year, which was only 6. I think that this year he enters the year healthy, and if he can play a full year, I expect the stolen base totals to go back to the, you know, 10 to 15 range that he showed, you know, back in 2011, 2012. And if that happens, you know, he's always been a fairly safe batting average player. And he's also always provided moderate home run power. So I think, you know, this is a player that is a low upside player and is also a low floor player, which means on draft day he won't get a lot of oohs and ahs from the other owners in the draft room. But, you know, when you draft him, you're gonna get a really good value. And, you know, especially when you look at Prado's numbers, you know, everyone loves Martin Prado. You know, but he doesn't steal that many bases, and he has a pretty good batting average, but, you know, he doesn't really provide very much else besides that. And Kendrick will provide, you know, a very similar batting average, maybe 15 points less than Prado, but he'll also provide, or Kendrick will also provide, you know, home runs, the same amount of home runs almost, and, you know, just a little bit more stolen bases. So I think this is the player that you should be targeting, you know, in all your leagues. Now, I know I mentioned earlier that, you know, Prado probably won't steal a lot of bases, but I do recognize that in 2012 he did steal 17, which was by far the most of his career. And I don't foresee that continuing in 2014, because if you look at his, you know, if you look at his other years, both in the majors and in the minors, he never stole more than five in a given year, which means to me, you know, I don't foresee him stealing any more than five or six in 2014, which means that Kendrick, even if he's, you know, even if he just steals a little bit more than he did last year, he'll still provide a better advantage in stolen bases than Prado. And the last player I wanted to discuss was Dan Uggla. Now, I know Dan Uggla has not been Dan Uggla in capital letters for the last 3-4 years, and that last year was by far the worst year of his career. However, I still think there's an opportunity that he can be able to raise his batting average back to the levels that the were in 2011 and 2012. Because last year he was a 179 hitter, but in 2011 and 2012 he was like a 225 hitter. And I do believe that it's possible for him to get the batting average back to that level, because last year you couldn't see. He had vision problems, and that was corrected at the end of this year. Which means, you know, obviously if you can't see, then you can't see the ball and you can't hit the ball, obviously. And I think if that's been corrected, I think it's possible that he could get back to that level of a 230 hitter. And if that does happen, you know, the power's still there. He still had 22 home runs last year. So, you know, if he can just have a 230 average, then he could be like the Chris Carter of second baseman this year. Which means that if you actually do have some pretty good batting average already on your team, you could be able to absorb that low batting average and still, you know, get a lot of power. What's good about Dan Uggla is that if you take him in a league and he flames out, you can just drop him, you know, no problem at all, and you can pick up someone else on the waiver wire, you know, pretty easily. Especially since, you know, like I said before, that second base is such a, you know, deep position this year. And if you're in need of power, and, you know, if you need power at the end of your draft, then why not take a shot on Dan Uggla? And that does it for the second base position. If you want to learn more about second base, feel free to read my fantasy guide, which can be found at mattcummins.com. And if you go to the section called Fantasy Guides, you'll be able to see a link to my 2014 Fantasy Guide, as well as my projections and rankings for the year. Okay. And I'll be right back in about 1 minute. Okay, so welcome back to the podcast, or to the show. I made myself a fruit smoothie, and I feel much better now. I feel more invigorated, and I'm ready to finish this podcast off so I can start making my beans. And that is not a metaphor. I'm actually going to be making beans right after I'm done recording this. So anyway, our musical guest this week was The Brother Kite. And The Brother Kite is a band that I've been listening to for 10 years now. And I reached out to them on their Facebook page, which I will link out in the show notes, asking if I could use their music for the podcast. And they were really cool and said yes within like a few hours, which is actually really cool. And now the way I would describe them is quite opposite to what you would find on their Wikipedia page. On their Wikipedia page, it says that they're a alternative rock band, which is the worst descriptor you could ever bestow on any type of band, because it doesn't really mean anything. What does that even mean? So, but if you ask me, and I'm actually really bad at describing music, so please take my descriptor with a grain of salt. I think they're a power pop band, but they also have some, I don't know, more like dream pop to them as well, you know? So I think they're kind of, I guess kind of like My Bloody Valentine, I guess, would be a comp. But they're pretty cool. And I think what I'm going to be doing is, as I go through the other positions, I'm going to be using their other records to introduce the show and give you an opportunity to listen to all their stuff. And you can actually have an opportunity to hopefully go out and buy their records and go to their site and buy their records. Yeah, so I guess that's it. I'm actually kind of, you know, it's like 4 o'clock my time. So I want to get those beans started so that they're cooked and ready to go by 6:30. So again, feel free to reach me at Twitter or on Twitter at Matt Cummins. The next podcast should be coming out probably in a few days. And today is Sunday. So maybe in a few days or maybe not. But I definitely will get all through all the positions by the end of the next. It's kind of cool that I'm figuring this out right now live for you guys. But it'll probably come out in the next couple of weeks. Try to get them all out for the next couple of weeks. So watch out for that. All right. You guys have a good day. All right. Bye. The silence breaks under northern skies, under the pressure of your own pride, and your belief that nothing survives beyond the April eyes. The torturous miles give way to thinking that something should never change, but the chill of the wind at your back reminds you of what cannot stay the same. Convinced of all new today, we pray the reason your heart is right will find its place in a long goodbye before a new word rings. If the stars realign with the moon behind them, then he may still stand a chance. But the odd reply forces your denial and nothing more than a glance. Come on and lay down the burden surrounding you. Are fading faster than I